The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Oral questions put by members, beginning at 12:43 until 1:43. The Honourable Member, I got that, thanks. The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Madam Speaker, the consultant hired to study the socioeconomic impact of gambling completed his study over 18 months ago. While the NDP may still be withholding final payment, we do know that the people of Nova Scotia have paid at least $144,000 for this work. We deserve to read this report. We deserve to judge it on its merits. And we all deserve better than a government which hides opinions and facts it disagrees with. The NDP have ushered in a new era of control, secrecy, and manipulation, a level of which the Harper government would be envious. My question to the minister: will you follow the recommendation of the review officer and release the final draft report in its entirety?
The Honourable Minister of Finance. Excuse me, the Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Certainly, the government understands and has heard the concerns of some Nova Scotians about the social impacts of gambling. And we've recently received the review officer's report. We recognize that her recommendations present a different point of view from the position taken from the government 18 months ago. We'll thoroughly review her recommendations and the report and be making a decision in the near future. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This minister has the power to release this report today. The minister could have done it at any time in the past year, but choose to hide it from the public. This behavior demands an answer. Is the minister hiding this report because she does not like what it says? I will read a quote on the draft report from the steering committee, and I quote, "The RFP was asking for a balanced presentation of socioeconomic impacts rather than a focus on negative impacts," end of quote. My question for the minister: is the minister hiding this report from the public because it reveals more negative information than she would like it to? And I will table those requests.
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
The government still has concerns about the original process used under the former government to get to the stage it did when we actually ended the contract. We want to make sure that there are no unintended consequences from the release of any material. We will thoroughly study and understand what the options are, what the impacts are in terms of information that's been perhaps produced partially in a flawed manner. And, you know, as I said, we're going to make sure we understand just what we need to do, and we'll try to work within the parameters of the FOIPOP Act. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, I can assure you that the public of Nova Scotia is making their judgment on this minister and this government on this document. Mr. Speaker, at one time in his life, the current Minister of Finance was legal counsel for both Dan O'Connor and Sean Fuller as they argued that the public has a right to public information. I will quote from O'Connor versus Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia's lawmakers clearly intended to provide for the disclosure of all government information in order to facilitate informed public participation in policy formulation, ensure fairness in government decision-making, and permit the airing and reconciliation of divergent views. No other province has gone so far in expressing such objectives, end of quote. Madam Speaker, no other province has gone so far and so fast back toward control, secrecy, and manipulation since the NDP have taken power. My question to the Minister, will you table today in this House the final draft report in its entirety?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
This government continues to value transparency and accountability, but at the same time, we do not want to be irresponsible. Considerable information has been that was associated with that earlier process has been released to the groups who had asked for it, and we're just going to study, make sure that that the remaining information is not going to do the situation and the people of this province any harm. So we will be very responsible in responding to the recommendations of the review officer. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Madam Speaker, the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Review Officer has stated in a report that it was a 48-day delay before the Department of Labour confirmed that it retained custody and control of the consultant's report on the socio-economic impact of gambling in Nova Scotia. So my question through you to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education is, what took the Minister so long?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As I said earlier in question period, that the government understands that that people in Nova Scotia are interested in the social impact of gambling, and we as a government are as well, because we want to make sure that as we continue with our gaming strategy, that we base decisions in the future on the most reliable and relevant information possible. We just have recently received the report from the review officer. We will study it in its entirety, and you can be sure we'll make a very careful and thoughtful response. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, from the report, the review officer believes issue over custody of the record arose as a result of reorganization of departments. However, at the same time, the government was preparing its responsible gaming strategy. So, Madam Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is, it seems quite strange that through the reorganization, the government was able to determine which department was responsible for the new gaming strategy, but it took 48 days to decide which department was responsible for the consultant's study. What was the government trying to hide?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I think everyone in this chamber appreciates that there's different aspects of different issues that belong to various mandates of various departments, and I'm not going to get into an organizational review of government past and present or future. I would just say that we are coordinated in our approach, that the departments continue to consult with one another, and you can be sure that we will have a common answer to this question. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
Well, Madam Speaker, this isn't the first time this government's been called out by an independent official for hiding information from the public. So, Madam Speaker, my final supplementary through you to the Minister. Will the government table the report in the House today and allow the public to make the decision to determine if the methodology is flawed or if the results are accurate?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Madam Speaker, I just want to assure all members of this chamber and all Nova Scotians that the provincial government will make a very thoughtful and careful analysis of its options and do what's in the best interest of Nova Scotians and also abiding by the principles that we hold so dear. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Madam Speaker, the Premier said yesterday that he meets regularly with municipalities. It makes a person wonder what he does during those meetings, since the municipalities are blindsided when the NDP turned the back on them. Municipalities are disappointed with the NDP. The municipality of Digby is expressing their concern, quote, concern and disappointment on the lack of consultation. We need to work together, and it would seem that the Dexter government has forgotten that, end of quote. My question to the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations is, why is the minister not working with the municipalities to come with an alternative solution for this serious problem?
The Honourable Minister for Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I met with the board of the UNSM last evening. That question was raised to me then. I had met with the President, Mayor McLean, some weeks before our announcement on the MOU. The one condition that he asked me for was 1 year's notice, because he even said he expected there'd be changes, but he made no request to consult.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, I will recall some of the information we received that the President of USM was informed 3 hours prior to the announcement of the MOU being canceled. The minister keeps trying to talk his way out of the hardships that he's imposing on Nova Scotians. This is not a one-way trade in the MOU. The municipalities take on extra responsibilities, such as the Auditor General and the Property Valuation Services Corporation. Mr. Speaker, what the NDP fails to mention is what it is only one-sided that the agreement is being cancelled. The NDP is downloading their responsibility and washing their hands. Yet the minister fully expects that the municipalities will still be able to take on additional responsibilities that they agreed to. My question to the minister is, after the minister has downloaded his responsibilities and walked away, does he still expect the municipalities to foot the bill for an Auditor General and the Property Valuation Services Corporation?
The Honourable Minister for Service at Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Yes.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his final supplementary.
Madam Speaker, another thing the Minister continues to forget is that this MOU is not just an agreement. Mr. Speaker, Bill 157, the Financial Measures Act of 2008, enshrined this agreement into law. Also, like so many other times, the NDP has failed to tell the full story. Not only is the minister turning his back on the communities across Nova Scotia, he is going to have to change the law of the province to do so. My question is, when should we expect to see the minister repeal the legislation around the MOU and legislate another broken NDP promise?
The Honourable Minister for Service Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, I'm glad to hear the member opposite talk about the law. I hope that he considers the law to be important, because if he does consider the law to be important, then he would consider the law that related to the MOU to be important, and that means he would consider the MOU to be important. And the MOU had a clause that said if the province could not afford it, the province could move out of it. So I hope he respects that, as well as the members of the UNSM. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. It is truly tragic when 9 individuals, all of whom were seeking help from the government, were never able to find it. Madam Speaker, the Minister of Health and Wellness received a letter a year and a half ago from a distinguished member of my community, the Chief of Police, informing her of deaths and warning her of others to come. On Tuesday, I asked her to table her response. She indicated she recalled a letter, requested that a response be sent. Madam Speaker, I'll ask the Minister again, will the Minister table, before the end of question period today, the response to Chief Mader's letter, dated January 15, 2009?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Madam Speaker, and I thank the member for the question. And Madam Speaker, the first thing I would say, it's truly tragic when there's even one death that results from the abuse of prescription drugs or any other substance that people may take. Madam Speaker, I did go back to my department and ask them to go back and provide for me a copy of the letter of the chief, which I received, I believe, on the 10th or the 15th of January in 2010, and as well as my response to the chief, which went out in February the 15th of 2010. In addition to that, 2 days after that letter came into our department from the chief, the prescription drug monitoring program were in contact with the chief by telephone, and shortly after that, the chief met with the Dr. Cameron Little, who is also the registrar of the College of Physicians and Surgeons, as well as the head of the prescription monitoring program. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Minister talked about working with the Coroner's Office. Well, Madam Speaker, I'm pretty certain the Coroner's Office confirmed that the deaths were as a result of prescription overdoses. Further proof, the Minister was well aware of what was happening in the Valley. The Minister talked about striking a committee that has only met three times in the last year and a half, and has confirmed she had a meeting or her department with Chief Mader. I'm wondering if the Minister could tell the House what has happened in the past year in relation to that significant letter that went to the Minister.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, through you to the member, the chief in his letter, he indicated that he certainly was concerned about what was occurring in his community, but that he was aware that this was occurring all across Nova Scotia, and indeed, this is a problem that we have throughout the province. As a result of the chief's letter, the prescription monitoring committee beefed up, I guess you would say, the work that they do with the chiefs of police across the province. And in fact, they initiated meetings with the Chief Police Association for the province. They've updated the guidelines that they distribute to pharmacies and to physicians throughout the province as a result of those meetings with chiefs of police. And they will continue to work with law enforcement to deal with this very serious matter. We need collaborations between our law enforcement community and our physicians and our pharmacists. And that is precisely what we are doing, Madam Chair.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The police in my community have been struggling and doing what they can. Families and addicts have been crying for help to no avail. And three ministers were informed via a letter from the Chief of Police that this was the case. Given that the Minister of Justice is responsible for ensuring our police have the resources they need to keep the public safe, and he, too, received a copy of the January 15, 2010 letter. Would the Acting Minister of Justice, before the end of question period today, table his response to Chief Mader's letter?
The Honourable Minister of Health and the Acting Minister of Justice.
I refer that question to the Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, through you to the member, in the response that I sent to the Kentville Police Chief, I indicated that I was responding on behalf of my colleague, the Minister of Justice, and my colleague, the Minister of Community Services, to whom he had addressed his letter. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Finance. The Minister of Finance has said in this House that what this government has done, we have said to the municipalities, we do not have the financial capacity at the moment to continue to accept an uploading of costs. Madam Speaker, the municipalities had an agreement with the province, and that agreement has been broken. It is common for federal, provincial, and municipal levels of government to share the cost of public services. The MOU spelled out that agreement. What would the minister say if the federal government said they will reduce transfers to our province in 2014 when there will be renegotiation of equalization and transfer payments?
The Honourable Acting Minister of... No? Sorry. The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, the member is asking me to address a hypothetical question which hasn't happened and may never happen, and if it does happen, it'll be several years from now. So with all due respect to the member, I decline to answer that question.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Well, Madam Speaker, usually we don't get answers, but it's not much different, I guess, if they're declined to be answered. But I know what this minister would say, and I know what this government would say. They would complain that the federal government is spoiling their plan to balance the budget, and they would complain that the federal government is downloading. And we know that there are municipal units in our province that are running a deficit. There are 12 towns, and there are 5 municipalities, and I'll table that information. But our provincial law requires them to balance their budgets within the next fiscal year. Now, to be consistent with this treatment of municipalities, will the Minister of Finance support a law to balance the provincial budget within the next financial fiscal year?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know what I have to do to get a decent question. Do I have to write it myself, Mr. Speaker?
Order. The Honourable Minister has the floor.
Speaker, is it every single thing that members on that side of the House have said about the municipal MOU is incorrect, Mr. Speaker, and they can repeat it over and over again, and it's still incorrect. This government hasn't downloaded onto municipalities a single nickel.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Madam Speaker, I think what we've pointed out today, this Minister of Finance and this government is inconsistent in their actions. They tell municipalities that they're going to have to pick up the costs where they leave off, but they wouldn't do the same thing if they were in their shoes. And Madam Speaker, there is one taxpayer, and that's what we must all realize, and that breaking the MOU with municipalities means that municipalities are still required to supply housing and correctional services, but they're losing revenue from the province to do that. And municipalities would be required to go to Nova Scotians to ask for more tax, likely more property tax, to pay for continued service provision. So, Madam Speaker, why does this minister continue to push our province in a direction that requires Nova Scotians to pay more tax?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Madam Speaker, a falsehood that is repeated is still a falsehood, Mr. Speaker. We are not downloading a single nickel to municipalities. What we're doing, Madam Speaker, is this. That government made expensive long-term promises to accept an uploading of costs from municipalities to the provinces, and we're saying that in the current financial situation, we are not in a position to accept the continued uploading promised by that crowd when they were in government, Mr. Speaker. It's just part of the financial mess that they left behind that this government is cleaning up.
Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, yesterday, or I guess a couple of days now, I questioned the Minister of Energy about onshore royalty rates, and he didn't quite answer the question, so we'll try again. Mr. Speaker, the minister stated, quote, "And at the moment, you might say we're very competitive," unquote. Well, Madam Speaker, competitive is obviously one thing, but would the minister explain why 10% royalty rates for oil and gas production is considered competitive when other provinces in the U.S. states are getting double or higher that rate and also staying competitive?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I mentioned we're competitive. You know, at this point in time in Nova Scotia, we don't have any drilling or any particular commercial activity onshore. We have some offshore, as you know. But so we're trying to encourage new activity. We're trying to encourage development to create good jobs in this province. And certainly, if we were to become much more interested or more activity, then we'd be in a better position to look at the royalty rates. But at the moment, we're trying to encourage development, and we're just trying to make it easier to for good development and good jobs here in Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think the Minister of Finance might be surprised to learn that we're not getting any royalties from any onshore mineral or oil and gas projects. The Minister mentioned only offshore, but of course I would assume, hopefully correctly, that we're receiving royalties from projects like the Point Oconee Strip Mine and so forth. But he says we're not receiving anything from onshore. Madam Speaker, the other day the Minister stated that his department was reviewing royalty rates, and one would hope that that's done on an ongoing basis. And that's all in good, but all provinces and states review these on a year-to-year basis. So that, yes, they stay competitive, and we certainly support them being competitive, but also that they bring the maximum benefit to Nova Scotians. Madam Speaker, will the Minister table the status of his review in the House today and explain why his government and the previous Tory government both failed to address the issue before now, when it was well known and well publicized that other provinces and states were significantly increasing their royalty requests?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And, you know, certainly in Nova Scotia, we have royalty rates on our minerals. But as I mentioned, the natural gas or oil, there's no activity onshore at the present time producing royalties. But that's under review within the department. And, you know, we're trying to remain competitive with other jurisdictions. And we want business here. And part of our job strategy is to create activity in the commercial field, and that's exactly what we're doing. And when we have lots of activity, then we can look at negotiating better rates. But at the moment, we need to attract the business here.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And my final supplementary will be to the Minister of Finance, because maybe he's a little bit more concerned about this, especially since, and let me start by giving a few quotes from the current Minister of Finance. He said, and the former Premier is named here, I know I can't say a name, has to show whose side he's on, the corporate cowboys or tax-paying Nova Scotians. He then went, the member for Halifax Fairview also said, it's unfortunate that the province continues to hand out money to large corporations. And then he also said, quote, somebody who is trusted needs to look at these things and say how these things are being used as corporate pirates are coming into Nova Scotia and ripping off Canadian taxpayers, unquote. So, given that the Minister of Finance has such very strong opinions on this sort of thing, and the Minister of Finance, with great fanfare, gallivanted around the province asking advice on how to get back to balance. It seems that he wanted to do it on the backs of Nova Scotians rather than big corporations.
Order. The member could please get to the question. Thank you.
Speaker, and it's a bit rich for the members over there who frequently give long speeches to complain.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. So, Madam Speaker, will the Minister of Finance explain why increasing royalties in Nova Scotia was not part of his back-to-balance strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'll refer that to the Minister of Energy.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And this government is working hard to create jobs in this province through our Jobs Here strategy and long-term, stable, good-paying jobs for Nova Scotians. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. The Cape Breton District Health Authority is coming out of what its CEO calls a very bad year. It was a year that saw many retirements, the departure of nurses, problems with anesthesia coverage, and fewer hours in the operating room for surgeons. Mr. Malcolm said in the media that as a result, patients were waiting longer. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health and Wellness. What is your department doing to recruit and retain surgeons in Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much for the question to the member through you, Madam Speaker. It is true that Cape Breton have had in the past year some challenges, but I understand from the CEO that things are improving, things are looking up. And with respect to what I and this government, and specifically the Department of Health, are doing with respect to physicians in Cape Breton, not only in Cape Breton, but in fact throughout the whole province, is we are in the process of developing a physician resource plan for the province. And we will be announcing details with respect to that plan fairly shortly, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, in the Cape Breton Post this morning, Dr. Russ Gowan, he's a surgeon, said he's frustrated by what's going on in health and care in Nova Scotia, and that he and his physician spouse are leaving for greener pastures in New Brunswick. Dr. Gowan said he and other surgeons have written letters to health authority management, but have seen no action. Madam Speaker, through you to the minister, is the minister aware of the dissatisfaction that Dr. Gowan and others have had with the health system in Cape Breton, and what has she done to address those concerns?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I had an opportunity to be in Cape Breton earlier this year and attend the annual meeting of the Association of Physicians for that district health authority. It was a very enlightening opportunity. The district has a tremendous amount of talent. It's a bit like being at the United Nations, people who have come to Cape Breton literally from all over the world, and that I think can be attributed a bit to Dr. Nakwi, the chief of medicine there, who is quite a remarkable individual. But as I said, we will continue to work with that district health authority and all of the district health authorities with respect to their needs for specialists and for general practitioners, and a physician resource plan for the province will certainly help us a great deal in this regard.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
Thank you so much, Madam Speaker, and I do agree that Dr. Nakwi is probably one of the best chiefs of medicine that this province has, but he too experiences the problems that many districts are seeing. In the last 3 years, they've seen the departure of three surgeons in Cape Breton, a grueling on-call schedule of one night in five, and 24-hour shifts have taken a toll, and they have moved on, Madam Speaker. So my question through you to the Minister, how long will this situation continue? How long will you allow Cape Bretoners to wait almost twice as long as people in the rest of the province for general surgery? And what will your department do to help Cape Breton District Health Authority meet those urgent needs?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The priority of the department is to prepare a physician resource plan, which will address the planning needs for specialists and general practitioners for our province for the next 10 years. Last year was a difficult year in the District Health Authority, and the CEO there says things are looking up. It's not only doctors that we are somewhat challenged around recruiting. It's also having nurses, particularly with specialization for ERs and intensive care units. And certainly we are putting a priority and a great deal of effort into addressing this very pressing matter, because we want people in Nova Scotia to get better care sooner and to be able to do it as close to their home communities as possible.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. My question is also for the Minister of Health and Wellness, and it's picking up on the question that was previously asked. Madam Speaker, yesterday a well-respected thoracic surgeon, Dr. Gowan, tendered his resignation from the Cape Breton District Health Authority. He takes with him his wife, also a physician, and both are heading to New Brunswick. As you know, Madam Speaker, Dr. Gowan has recently chosen to speak out publicly about the challenge he faced He tried to get people to listen, but was unable to get answers or action. The end result, Cape Bretoners have lost two well-respected healthcare professionals. My question to the minister, Madam Speaker, when was the minister made aware that the situation in Cape Breton was so bad?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I want to start by saying that, you know, as Minister of Health, I would prefer never to have to lose any doctors out of our province. One doctor is one doctor too many. However, I do recognize that doctors do move around the country as opportunities are better elsewhere. In the Cape Breton District Health Authority, I think it's important to note that last year, although they lost five physicians, they gained 15 physicians, Madam Chair. So it's not a change that is to the detriment of the DHA. They will continue to provide the good quality services that they have. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. What the Minister failed to say was those additional doctors weren't surgeons. Madam Speaker, when OR time can't be made available because there is a shortage of nurses, people requiring elective surgeries are waiting too long. Elective surgeries become emergencies as a result, and specialists burn out. Then they leave. Madam Speaker, this minister cannot hide behind the District Health Authority on this one. The minister knows full well she has a role to play to ensure the residents of Cape Breton have access to healthcare professionals. Tuesday, Cape Breton suffered a double whammy and lost two, one of them a surgeon. My question to the minister, what is the minister going to do to fix this problem with the retention of surgeons in Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And as I said, we will work very closely with the District Health Authority. I have the highest regard for the CEO of that health authority and his abilities. We monitor fairly carefully the trends month over month in the District Health Authorities. And I'd like to assure members, particularly members from Cape Breton, that surgical cases, general surgical cases, are up this month over last month and up that month over the month before. So the trends are heading in the right direction, and we will continue to work with the DHA to ensure they have the tools that they need to be able to keep those trends going in that direction.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's cold comfort to the people waiting for surgeries in Cape Breton that the trends are continuing upwards while the surgeries are, the waiting list is growing. My final supplementary, Madam Speaker, this minister is responsible for human resource planning. She has a role to play as a partner in the recruitment of healthcare professionals. She has failed on both counts as far as we're concerned in Cape Breton. I will repeat again, Madam Speaker, the end result, the residents of Cape Breton lose two great healthcare professionals. My final supplementary to the minister, why does the minister continue to believe that everything is fine with our healthcare system in Cape Breton when the real truth is it is not? Hopefully, the minister, Madam Speaker, will not resort to the kind of statement she used to make in opposition, where she used to say, why should we trust you now?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Well, as I said, the first 3 months of this year have supported that there is a change, there is improvement in the number of general surgical cases that are being done over the number of surgical cases that were done last year. And the Honourable Member may not find that a very comforting piece of information, but certainly for the people who are able to get that surgery, and indeed for people who are waiting for surgery, I believe that if people recognize that things are improving, it does in fact give them some comfort knowing that they stand a good chance of getting in quicker because the trends are in fact moving in the right direction, Madam Chair.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Insurance Bureau of Canada, as a stakeholder of the Department of Environment, has been asked to review the rationale for environment quality standards for contaminated sites in Nova Scotia. The document contains hundreds of pages for scientific criteria and numbers on hundreds of contaminants. The IBC, not being in the science business and not having a scientist on staff, is concerned about its ability to interpret what the implications of the standards will be for its industry and therefore would find it difficult to take a true position on the document. Madam Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Environment. Is this department preparing a supplement that would outline the practical implementation of the environment quality standards? And if not, how is it going to be sure he is gathering the right information from stakeholders?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And to the member opposite, and through you, I can assure you that this is, the member opposite talked about contaminated sites, and this is something that was identified in the previous year by the Auditor General, and this is something that we take very seriously. And I have the greatest confidence in our staff, and we'll be taking this issue forward as we move forward. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. By providing practical application of the regulations, it will encourage willing cooperation of the public in the cleanup process, while avoiding disincentives that would penalize property owners for reporting oil spills. The ability to achieve this balance will have important implications on the cost and availability of insurance. Insurance premiums that are a direct reflection of the claims cost are already on the rise in Nova Scotia due to the increased frequency and severity of weather-related events. If the proposed environment quality standards result in significant increases in the cost of remediation, there's little doubt that some homeowners will choose to forego insurance and assume the personal financial risk should a spill occur. Madam Speaker, through you to the Minister, will the Department of Environment oversee a cost-benefit analysis study funded by a partnership of interested parties to set the terms of reference and ensure the appropriate weight is given to the impact on public safety, environmental cleanliness, the risk and the potential cost to homeowners, and the practicality of the implementation?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Again, Madam Chair, through you to the member opposite, this is something that that's on our radar, that we're taking under consideration. I have the greatest confidence in our staff. And I think the member opposite may be alluding to some of the issues regarding around homeowners and their soil contamination to do with their oil barrels. And I just want to table, Madam Minister, some of the information that we supply to our residents across Nova Scotia, and this is valuable information. And I would like for the member opposite to share this information with his constituents. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Insurance Bureau of Canada has long advocated for a distinction between the remediation of a fuel oil spill that would happen on a homeowner's property and the release of contaminants. A typical residential fuel oil spill is most often a known fuel oil in a relatively small quantity over a short period of time. Contaminated sites or brownfields tend to involve industrial contamination in unknown quantities and the locations over a substantially longer time frame. Madam Speaker, through you to the Minister, will the Department of Environment look at the separate and distinct differences between spills and contaminations in order to make sure the regulation is practical for homeowners?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Again, Madam Chair, to you, to the member opposite, this is something that we take very seriously, and this issue about contamination and residential use, again, this is something in the literature that we have, and we have it available through all our staff, all our different offices, is available to the public. And again, I just want to point out that we tabled that before we actually got the question on the particular on the issue. So I think that in reflection, this government has done more in 2 years in government than the previous government has done in the last three decades. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, last month, the Convergys Call Center in Cornwallis closed down after 6 years of operation. This put almost 300 people in the area out of work. Madam Speaker, this is a huge blow to the area, and the people are concerned how silent this government's been on this issue. In addition, there is now a large, very expensive facility which goes unused, which in turn will become another burden to our municipality. My question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism: what possible use has the Minister's department identified for the former Converges Call Centre in Digby Annapolis?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, through you to the member opposite, is, you know, we've gone through this a number of times, and we all know that the last few years in Nova Scotia have been particularly tough years. We also know that contact centres have changed somewhat. Many have closed, all because things in the global environment have changed so much, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, we have NSBI who is certainly on the ground and who are pursuing, as they would for every region in the province of Nova Scotia, employment opportunities for all Nova Scotians, regardless of where they live. We are well aware of the Cornwallis situation, Mr. Speaker, and through the Office of Education, Advanced Education and Labour, and with NSBI, we're putting all things in motion to try to be of assistance to the region.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And we know times have changed, and we need to change with them, and faster than what we are. Madam Speaker, Converges operated this centre from 2004 until just last month, and they received close to $5 million from this province. In an area with a population of less than 3,000, 300 people out of work is a huge loss. Madam Speaker, the people of Digby Annapolis are wondering if there is any work being done at all to try to fill this empty facility. So my question to the Minister: what new business opportunities has the Minister sought out to bring good-paying jobs back to Cornwallis in the riding of Digby Annapolis?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I've got to say this. In the member opposite, in his preamble, he mentioned that times have changed. No one recognizes that more, Madam Speaker, than this government. For the first time in over 20 years, maybe for the first time in 250 years, this government has recognized that things have changed. And as a result of that, Madam Speaker, within
the Minister has the floor.
You know what, Madam Speaker, we recognize things have changed. As a result of that, that's why we developed a strategy called Jobs Here. A Jobs Here strategy is going to work for every region in the province of Nova Scotia to create meaningful and good jobs, Madam Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his final supplementary.
Madam Speaker, the people of Digby Annapolis are not seeing jobs here nor there. Madam Speaker, a closure on this scale means that communities in the area will continue to lose workers to cities elsewhere in the Maritimes and in Canada. The riding of Digby Annapolis has been losing too many people, but without good prospects for decent jobs, it is difficult for people to stay in that community. So my final question to the Minister: when does the Minister expect he will find a replacement business for the empty Converges facility in Cornwallis, and when will these people get back to work?
The Honourable Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, as Minister responsible, I don't see any humour with loss of jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Madam Speaker. And I can tell you this, Madam Speaker, is that this government, since it's come into power, has been looking at things when it comes to employment and employment opportunity, something that no other government has done to this scale before, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, we are investing in Nova Scotians for the first time in over 20 years, Madam Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Energy. As the Minister knows, concerns have been raised by constituents in Cumberland, Colchester, and Pictou counties regarding the possibility of hydraulic fracturing, known as fracking, in three blocks of land along the North Shore. I've raised these concerns in correspondence to the Premier, copied to the Minister March 17th. I want to thank the Minister for responding on behalf of the Premier. And in reply to a question in the House yesterday, however, it was unclear what the Minister's position is with respect to particular activities during 2011. So my question to the Minister is this. Will there be any fracking or microfracking done in any blocks of land by any exploration companies during 2011?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. I too share the concern the Honourable Member has for the health and welfare of residents along the North Shore, and the very last thing we want to do is see damage to our environment or damage to our drinking water. And that's why we've set up a review to try to get the facts, to try to base those facts on science, and there's a review underway, but at this time it's an opportune time to do that because there are no applications for hydraulic fracturing, and we don't anticipate any during the period of time of review, which will take up until about early 2013.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, thank you to the Minister for that information. On March 28th, a petition with over 1,000 names was presented to the Minister. These residents are anxious, as the Minister knows. They're anxious about the environmental damage that could be caused by fracking if it's used during the exploration and drilling process. So my question to the Minister is not about applications, but it is about permits. Are there any industrial permits currently held by any oil or gas company that would allow fracking to take place in Nova Scotia without the company requesting a further permission from the government?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I should correct in my last answer. I meant to say there's no applications under review during the period of the review, which will take place up until early 2012. So I correct that. Again, there's no applications out there for hydraulic fracturing. There's none that I'm aware of. If a company wanted to do a type of activity, they would have to apply to the Department of Environment and Department of Environment, or both departments, Energy and Environment. So at this point in time, I'm not aware of any applications that are out there.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I think we need to be clear on application and practice. And Mr. Speaker, in the Securities and Exchange Commission report for the period that ended January 31st, 2010, Triangle Petroleum Corporation reported, and I would quote, three intervals in the E38A well, which is in Hants County, were perforated and treated with diagnostic microfracs, end of quote. The report also says, and I would quote, we are continuing to work with these results to determine future completion operations, and I will table those reports. So, Mr. Speaker, it's clear fracking did occur in this province in 2010, and it's clear that at least one company plans to continue that practice in 2011. So my question to the Minister is this. Will the Minister make a commitment that he will refuse to have any permits for fracking or microfracking as part of any company's exploration plan until the Minister, as he states himself, quote, it can be done right?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and you're correct in that there have been activities in the past, but again, I'm not aware that there's any active applications out there at the present time for any new particular activities. But and I also come back to the whole issue of hydraulic fracturing and would encourage the Honourable Member to work with her residents to, we're in the process right now of looking at the scope of the review that's being done. We encourage any Nova Scotian to put forward ideas or thoughts on how best we can do that review. And again, our goal here is to not see any environmental damage, not to see any harm to our drinking water. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, encouraging green technology is a positive step, but yesterday's announcement of the $24 million Clean Technology Fund does nothing to address the general business climate in this province, which is poor. Madam Speaker, my question through you to the Minister of Economic Development, does he honestly believe that transferring $24 million of taxpayers' money to a Crown corporation is the way to encourage innovation in clean technology or any other type of technology when we have a general business climate that through the actions of this government discourage innovation and economic growth?
The Honourable Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, through you, I will say this, is that we are using all the tools that are available to us to be innovative, to invest in Nova Scotians, to create good jobs here locally in the province of Nova Scotia, so Nova Scotia can stay at home. So we will use all the means available to us. And yes, if that means us being creative and innovative, if we're going to be criticized for that, Madam Speaker, so be it.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and I would say they've yet to find the right tools. I think I speak for most Nova Scotians, Madam Speaker, when I say that government's job is to ensure that we have a tax rate that are fair and competitive compared to our neighbours and other competitors around the world. Madam Speaker, my question through you to the Minister, would the Minister not agree that this is the real way to encourage true innovation and sustainable innovation in the private sector?
The Honourable Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I'm at a wee bit of a loss here, not because I don't know what to say, but because we just came through a government that for 20 years nothing happened in the province of Nova Scotia. For 20 years, Madam Speaker, we had no growth, no economic growth in the province of Nova Scotia. That's a proof in fact. What we are trying to do, Madam Speaker, is we are trying to, and we are, turning that ship around.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And that minister must be touring the province with his eyes closed if he can't see the good work the previous government has done by way of job creation in this province. Madam Speaker, I believe, and our party believes, that Nova Scotia has all it takes to be truly great and innovative in the area of clean technology and in many other fields if the business community is just left to do its work in a fair way. Madam Speaker, my question through you to the Minister. Can the Minister tell this House today when his government will come clean and do the real work of creating an environment for economic growth, innovation in this province, and clean technology development, and in business development generally, not by shifting taxpayers' money around in different funds, but by creating a truly competitive tax environment in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I can stand in my place and I can say that change that the member opposite is talking about, I can tell you when it began, Madam Speaker. It began in June the 9th, 2009, Madam Speaker. That's when it began.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Madam Speaker, for years now I've been asking the Department of Transportation to have Brooks Drive completely resurfaced and repaired. I would like to thank the Minister and his department for the patchwork that has been done on Brooks Drive so far in East Preston, but it's not enough. The road was originally paved in 1976, nearly 40 years ago, and this street, Madam Speaker, is in very poor condition. My question to the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal is, will you commit to completely resurfacing and repairing Brooks Drive this year?
The Honourable Minister for Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I thank the member opposite for that question, and I must compliment you on the fact in the past we've had correspondence and talked about this particular road. I'm aware of the importance of Brooks Drive in your community. It is one of those roads that does have some importance economically. It is a road that I know is of some consequence, and we will continue to address it as an important issue for you in a timely manner.
The The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Madam Speaker, Brooks Drive is an important road and is highly traveled. When the department's five-year highway plan was announced in November last year, I was just disappointed to learn that Brooks Drive was not mentioned and it would not be resurfaced. This road is in dire straits and needs attention now. Madam Speaker, my question is, why was Brooks Drive not included in the government's five-year highway plan?
The Honourable Minister for Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, and it gives me an opportunity to talk about the five-year road plan. And I know that members opposite and members of this side of the House have on numerous occasions approached members of the staff and approached me and asked about particular roads. Why isn't this road or that road on the five-year road plan? I bring to the members opposite and this side of the House, and I bring to the member from Preston this time, that there are a number of secondary roads. I continue to sign tenders for local and secondary roads. As we speak, this morning I did a number more. I mean, we cannot include every road in the five-year road plan. I see the member from Digby Annapolis, of course, mouthing a particular road to me. I want to make sure the member from Preston understands that we did not include or expect every local and secondary road to be included in the five-year road plan. Those roads are important to your community. I know you've brought it to my attention in the past. When we bring forward those roads over the next number of months or the next year, it's not necessary for every bit of asphalt work or every bit of chip sealing work to be done in this province to be included in the five-year road plan. Stick with us and it will be addressed.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his final supplementary.
Madam Speaker, I'm hopeful that the Minister will address the
concern. Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the Legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.